This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day as we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Last Friday was the wrap of the short session of the Oregon State Legislature. We're spending some time part of this week getting reaction from area lawmakers about what took place. They're happy about or not happy about the session. And State Senator David Brock Smith joining us this afternoon. David, thanks for being on.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it. And welcome from, I'm still up here in Salem, so welcome from your Senate District 1 office in the Capitol.
Now, I would imagine a lot of times lawmakers, when the adjournment comes, they're ready to head out the door quickly, but you've stayed apparently, huh?
Well, there's still work to do, and I was down in district for the Greatest of the Great event. Of course, I always boast about how the Umpqua Valley has some of the best wines in the state, and congratulations to Abacella for their Greatest of the Grape win, and then came back up Sunday morning, and I'm just working yesterday, and then this morning, and this afternoon is the filing deadline at 5 o'clock, and they have an event every 2 years during the filing day on the House floor. So I always, we're they open up the House floor and they have everyone filing up on big screens, and all the candidates and some legislators are there. And so as the Senate Republican deputy leader, I always try to be here for the candidates that are going to be here and answer any questions and give them some support and, you know, and moving forward. So it's a busy day, even though the session's over.
Now, does that mean these filers are people that are incumbents that are running for re-election, or does this include new folks, or what?
All of the above. Anyone that is filing for elected office in the state is welcome to come at 2:30 on the House floor for filing day. And look forward to meeting some of the candidates that I don't know. Of course, I know quite a few of them. Not as many in the House, of course, not being in the House anymore, but I know a lot of our Senate candidates, and just want to give them the attaboy or the attagirl for filing and what support we can get.
Now, does this include candidates outside of legislative seats?
No, just the legislative seats.
All right. So everything kind of ended fairly quickly, it seemed like, on Friday. First of all, give us an update on where things stand with this gas tax measure moving to the May primary, it looks like.
So we have challenged. There's multiple challenges. I joined my Senate Republican colleague, Christine Drazen, in a federal challenge for the gas tax. And I know that Representative Deal and others have filed, as well as individuals that were part or county captains within the 36 counties in the state have filed. It's going to court this week. And so I will be here and look forward to being there in court for the arguments this week and supporting our challenge. And so with the May primary, it's ridiculous. I mean, we already know the outcome. The arguments from the governor is that we have to know what the people of Oregon think. Well, when you have an overwhelming majority, you have over 98% of the Oregonians that submitted testimony, nearly 5,000 pieces, did not want it moved. And you had over 96% of the over 10,000 pieces of testimony submitted back in the special session on the gas tax legislation itself in opposition. We already know what Oregonians think. We passed various pieces of legislation that in this short session that reallocated, which was the Republicans' version back in the long session of 25, as well as the special session. We identified over $502 million within ODOT's budget that could be reallocated to fill the hole that was supposedly created in their budget shortfall. And that is exactly what the Democrats did in the short session. So we're just waiting for the judicial process to move forward to see, because I believe that it's in violation of the law to move the ballot as the signatures that were collected, again, over 250,000 Oregonians signed a referendum for a referral to the November 2026 ballot, and to arbitrarily allow the Democrat supermajority and the governor to move that is ridiculous and against the law, and my and many of our colleagues' opinions. And then lastly, you remember that the governor waited to sign the legislation to limit the amount of time that we could collect signatures, but yet she signed the bill that moved the vote from November to May within hours. So politics at foot, for sure.
Now, once that vote does go ahead, if it stays in May, most observers really don't seem to think the court challenges will be successful. So if the vote does happen in May, once the results come out, presuming that it goes down, do you expect a special session to be called once those results are out?
I don't, because it is obvious that the Oregonians are opposed to the governor and the Democrat supermajority's proposal. We've, again, in this legislative short session, secured the budget utilizing existing resources. I do not see anything or any special session regarding transportation until I'm sure there will be a work group put together to talk about it and discuss alternatives, but I don't see a special session, and it won't be dealt with until the 2027 legislative session.
So let's talk about the session along with that measure, perhaps, in your mind, some of the other biggest negatives on legislation in the past.
You know, there was some bad bills, and I'm putting together my end of session newsletter, so I'll be able to talk more about have a better list. Of course, the governor and the Democrat supermajority passed legislation that would protect physicians that were providing gender affirming care for people that don't live in Oregon, which we were adamantly opposed to. You know, it is ridiculous that, in fact, in my floor testimony to my legislative colleagues, I reminded them back in the 19th session when we did some juvenile justice reform that every single one of them that were on the floor that were here back then were talking about how a youth's brain does not fully develop until their mid-20s, and yet you're allowing them to move forward on gender-affirming care and puberty blockers at 14. It is inhumane, as far as I'm concerned. There were bills that were directly attacking law enforcement, unfortunately, federal law enforcement, that are unconstitutional, that, I mean, the state can't tell the feds what to do, even within the state of Oregon in many, many ways. And so we had pieces of legislation that supposedly won't allow federal officers to wear facial coverings and so forth. But, and again, my opposition testimony on the floor, we talked about how these groups of protesters are doxing police and law enforcement, and how that is wrong. And one of the ways that they are able to protect themselves is they can have identified law enforcement, but they're protecting themselves and their family by these individuals that will go to their homes and harass their families and so forth. And I reminded them that I have never heard any one of them with their outcries that COVID is over, and yet the Antifa protesters that continue to riot and do destruction to businesses and facilities are face covered, and that seems to be okay. There were other bills that, of course, we all voted no on, but again, I'll have a better list. But we did have some wins.
Yeah, let's talk about the biggest positives for you in this session.
Well, we passed 4153, which was the farm store bill, which it was unfortunate we had to move forward with legislation, but one of the environmental for-profit nonprofits groups, 1,000 Friends, you may remember last summer, we're going after our farmers and their farm stands, and so we needed to codify in statute their ability to do so. I partnered and chief sponsored the legislation with Representative Breeze Iverson, the former House Republican leader. We were able to get our Dash 3 amendment that really helped protect our very small farm stands so that they will have a pathway. So now folks that, Mahaffey Ranch, over in east of Coos Bay in the Wooden Shoe Tulip Farm, but also our little small UPIC and other little farm stands will be able to move forward with a permit or be grandfathered in, and so that was a win. The other big win is, Kyle, as you know, we had some serious budgetary problems coming into this session, but I was able to make sure that we, with Representative Osborne and Representative Scarlatos and Representative Boyce, we were able to hold on to the $35 million that we've secured for the third veterans home to be built in Roseburg. We were able to hold on to the $100 million investment for the Pacific Coast Intermodal Port project at the Port of International Port of Coos Bay. And we were able to secure $45 million in a loan guarantee, essentially, for Bay Area Hospital to move forward with the ability to refinance some debt, which was a huge win, and it barely got through the Senate. But it was a huge win, and it gives them a sigh of relief to move forward with services, knowing that they have that security.
Any other funding specifically for Douglas County for new projects?
So yes, working with Representative Osborne, I think he probably mentioned, but $450,000 for Glide revitalization. And Gina Beam, the executive director in that organization, they're doing fantastic work out there, still recovering from the devastating fires. And so that is moving forward. And proud of Representative Osborne and our colleagues for their work in securing those resources.
And now as we move ahead for lawmakers going into the spring, a lot of people are going to be focused on campaigns. Do you still have committee meetings or other things going on outside of the session?
We do. We still have legislative days where we come together and committees meet every 2 months. As we move, this session is over, but preparing for the 27 long session really starts now. We have to submit our legislative concepts by November. So usually those doors open September, and I know that seems like a long ways away, but in the scheme of things and political time, that is not very long away at all. Now that session's over, it allows me a little more time to work on my other work in regards to the Council of State Governments West and my co-chair position on the Wildfire and Disaster Preparedness Committee. We're moving forward in continuing to gain those 13 Western states, state legislators from Wyoming to Alaska and Hawaii, unified voice to the to our congressional delegation and folks in D.C. to get them to front load the resources needed within the Forest Service and BLM so that we can then utilize our firefighters in the off season for fuel reduction work. So thinning, ladder fuel reduction, prescribed fire. In fact, Representative Osborne and I met with individual commissioners and the folks at the DR at DR Johnson, Jody and Westbrook and them about their the potential cogen facility, utilizing a lot of that that slash and that work. It was a great meeting and connected them with some other folks around the state that can assist. And so that is going to be a big focus, especially as we move into fire season when we've had such a mild winter.
Let's kind of switch gears here. You announced recently a run for the U.S. Senate. That's been out for a while. How's the response to that going so far?
The response has been fantastic. You know, I announced last Tuesday, so a week ago today. It has just been an overwhelming overwhelming just wave of support across the state. Of course, I have the support of all my legislative Republican and House and Senate colleagues. They're taking that message home with them. It has just been incredible. I haven't really had any time yet to hit that campaign trail, so to speak. But that will start after today, and I'll be traveling around the state. I have you know, different events set up around the state, and more are coming online every day. And I'm just really looking forward to getting out and talking to individuals about my campaign for the United States Senate and the vision and what it can mean for Oregon. As we talk about, you know, Oregon first in the United States Senate and raising up those voices of all Oregonians back in Washington, D.C.
U.S. Senate campaigns always involve a lot of campaign spending. Any idea yet how much you need to raise? I mean, presuming you win the primary, how much you need to raise looking towards the general election?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, if you think about it, the gubernatorial race last time, there was between $28 and $32 million dollars were spent just on the governor's race. This Senate race will need a lot of funding. And my opponent has a little over $6 million in his war chest. And so we'll be out there raising small dollar resources. Not just in Oregon, but across the nation, because we'll also be, of course, engaged with the National Republican Senate Committee and looking for their help, because there's many of us, including myself, or I wouldn't be doing it, that believe that Oregon is ready for a new voice in Washington in the United States Senate. And I have the experience and the knowledge and the understanding and the drive to get it done, and look forward to talking to everyone about that mission and raising the resources to be able to combat and flip that Senate seat back to a Republican. It wasn't just until 2008 that that Senate seat was a Republican. And I believe that there's a lot of Oregon voters, as you know, the non-affiliated voters are the largest voting bloc in this state today. And they're just as frustrated as our Republicans and a lot of Democrats with the leadership. I think you saw Governor Kotek last week lost the support. Well, you don't technically lose the support, but the endorsement of two huge blue endorsers, which was the Working Families Party and the Oregon Education Association, is refusing to endorse Governor Kotek. And it's her record is right there with my opponents in the United States Senate. And so I believe that that we have a path. We're going to work our campaign to go through that path all the way to the United States Senate.
Just a few weeks ago, you were in the same room with Senator Merkley for the Roseburg Town Hall at UCC. I wonder if you've actually talked to the senator about your challenge directly.
I did reach out to the senator the morning of my announcement last Tuesday. And we did correspond briefly. I do want to thank the senator because I reached out to him weeks ago for his assistance with the Bay Area hospital legislation. And of course, he rarely engages in state issues, having no longer served in the legislature. But he did give me a call the Sunday before my announcement and did fill me in that he did have some conversations, and I appreciate his support of Bay Area Hospital. We did talk about it after the Roseburg Town Hall. We were over in North Bend, and we were able to have the CEO of Bay Area Hospital there to kind of lay it out. And so I was grateful that not only did we get the bill passed, but we got the dollars done. So don't forget, everyone, if you want to learn more, go to davidbrocksmithfororegon.com.
All right, out of time. We'll talk again soon. State Senator David Brocksmith in Salem, thanks for being on.
Thank you, Kyle.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.